Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to the Wild Tales podcast. I'm Jason Fox, and this series is all about adventure, resilience, and inspirational humans. The podcast is presented by the Booker Man and in partnership with Talisker, the single malt whiskey made by the sea. My guest today is Ness Knight, an explorer, conservationist, and presenter whose expeditions around the world have made her a cult figure. Working with indigenous people, she was the first person to descend the Essequibo River in Guyana. She's traversed the Namib Desert solo, cycled Bolivia, become the first woman to swim the length of the Thames, and a hell of a lot more. In the episode, we answer some questions that you've asked me on Instagram. I'm going to be sending a bottle of Talisker to the top question. In addition, malts.com are offering a 10% off promo code Talisker15DE. Redeemable at checkout on www.malts.com until the 1st of October 2020. Discount may only be used once for individual Talisker Distillers Edition products for sale at £100 or less. No minimum spend, but a delivery charge may apply. Not to be used in conjunction with any other offer, and gift card purchases are excluded. 18 plus and subject to malts.com terms of sale. Here we go, and I hope you enjoy this one.
Here we are, Ness. Not a bit of a legend, massive legend. You normally do... You're away most of the time, really, aren't you, to be fair?
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind. Look at the past decade and I'm kind of thinking, when have I bloody stopped? And so, you know, this whole quarantine and lockdown is it's probably a good thing, to be honest with you.
It has been good, to be fair. I mean, bloody people have listened to me bang on about it enough, you know. I, although it's been hard for people, I didn't mind quarantine. I was happy to sort of like bed down and sort some stuff out around the house that I probably would never have ever done and sort of connect with a few different people. But ultimately, from being someone who's always on the move, and actually I'd like to tell people, we've never met. We've got friends that have met, and we know the same people and all this. And then we did nearly meet on an underground escalator. You were going up and I was going down.
And do you remember that? I had a giant wooden paddle, didn't I?
Yeah. It looked like you'd around London from like the bloody Congo or something. So I was like, "What is that?" There was a weird like glance at each other, and then that was it. It was done.
Yeah.
So that was our nearest meet. But anyway, obviously being used to getting away and whatnot. How have you found the transition into lockdown?
Oh, you know, it's been a mixed bag, to be honest with you. As you said, I'm used to going around the world and being on the go and never stopping. Legs don't really touch ground very much. And I think I needed it, to be honest with you. I balked at it and I bitched and I moaned for a hell of a long time because I get bored really quickly. And that's why I do what I do. And I don't like someone dictating to me what I can and can't do, where I can and can't go, but it's necessary times. And then after a while of finding it pretty tough, also my man is halfway around the world. We got locked apart from each other. He's in South Africa and I'm here. So it's been 6 months apart already. And I went through a bit of a tough time with that and sitting with your own thoughts when you kind of used to being distracted by being on the go for a while. And then I realized actually it's a really good thing because it's come at a time in my life where I think I really needed to just sit down, be quiet with my own thoughts and recalibrate. And think of what direction am I going in from here? What have I achieved so far? And I think it was hugely productive from that. And there's been an enormous amount of change coming out of that, and all for the better. So, yeah, mixed bag. And I think all in all, I'm pretty pleased with it.
Have you been able to keep up the same sort of fitness routines, or have you changed it, or have you adopted different exercise, you know, different routines with regard to training? Because I know, like, I'm sure you're like me, where you've got to get that in, otherwise.
It's a nightmare otherwise. I'm not a great person to be around unless I've got that in the bag. So I've got, you know, kettlebells and dumbbells lying around me here, and yeah, it's been a lot of just trying to do body weight stuff and really just grabbing. Thank goodness I do have a few of the weights, and I've been staying a lot by my boat in Essex. I'm currently at my parents' house at the moment, so a bit of a different scene, but yeah, doing the boat work as well was keeping me fit. So it was I'll be honest with you, I fell off the wagon for a while,
yeah,
with exercise, and I got lazy, and I realized at that point that I was starting to be a really not a very nice person to be talking to on the phone, and you know, not in a good headspace, and negative talk going on. And I was like, what the hell is going on here? And you realize that that's, I function off of the endorphins that come from exercise and being fit and healthy in that way. So yeah, it's been a shift, and it's been up and down, and I've fallen off the wagon many times, but hey, you know, it's weird times.
Well, thank God you're back on the wagon, so we can talk nicely and you're not having a go at me. But hang on a minute, what's this boat thing?
I feel like one of those stereotypical kind of, I've become an adventure explorer and hey, I got a boat to live on. There was a trend for a while, wasn't it? So I planned on sailing around the world, and then I changed that to sailing around the UK. But there's a hell of a lot of work that needs to be put into this little 1970s rundown boat that, she's a tank, but oh my gosh, head to toe, it's just stripped out. And so she's on the hard, which means out of the water at the moment. And that's my home at the moment.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, my old man lives on a boat. He sort of like cuts around the Med doing his own thing, living the dream. It's pretty cool. But my podcast, they pretty much, because we like to find out about the people, they sort of go right back to the beginning. So you're a woman of exploration, and you travel the world doing all sorts of stuff. How did you get into it? What sparked it all off?
It was accidental, completely accidental. In a way, you would have thought it makes sense, because I went through quite a few different degrees at university that I never finished any of them, by the way. got bored of them. And then I went through quite a few different careers. So it wasn't a surprise that I fell into something quite unusual and odd, because that was my track record. But it was accidental. I was working in London at the time teaching business for a social enterprise, and I was teaching all these guys and girls how to make their dream come true and stop working for someone else and lining their pockets and, you know, stand on their own two feet. And I realized that I was not taking my own advice, and I was just a bit fed up of that whole London vibe. I felt like it had a timestamp on it, and I just needed to get out, really needed to get out. And went on an expedition supporting someone in America. And after that, just felt like I didn't know my ass from my elbow. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And so didn't get my flight home. I just decided, I had almost no money, I was just going to cycle across America, and I was going to follow my nose. And I didn't, you know, it's stuff that I'd never really been doing that before. It was brand new to me. And I thought, you know, when you in your early 20s and you feel like you've not done very much that's tested yourself on your own, it's fine testing yourself in a controlled environment with a lot of team support. And I just felt like I needed to do something to you know, cut and bruise my knees a bit and figure out who the hell I was. And I didn't know what career I was going to go into after that. I had no idea what I was doing. So yeah, cycled across America on my own. And yeah, it's just all unfolded from there, and decided that I was storytelling about it at the time. And I didn't realize that people were craving a few more women in that whole scene. And suddenly out of nowhere, I wasn't intending it, there was this, you know, demand for me to carry on telling these stories, and hey, presto.
That's awesome. I mean, it sounds like you sort of like went on an expedition, loved the bubble, and was too scared to come out of it, so just kept...
Yeah, that's the blunt way of putting it, to be honest.
I like to make things easier, because I'm a pretty simple person, so yeah. Okay. I was just trying to sort of like work it all out.
It's true though, yeah. Yeah. And I've got a bit of a screw loose in my head, so I get bored, and I also I like the extremes. And
it's a good thing as well, isn't it? You know, to keep chasing that. You know, if you're someone that's not, you know, of the norm. You know, I don't mean that in a bad way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Sort of like finding the new bubble or the new thing that keeps you ticking over.
Yeah,
I didn't know this because I'm pretty rubbish, but you grew up in Africa.
Which
fascinates me. I get talking about my old man for some reason. He grew up in Kenya, Kenya, wow. Dependent on the different people, but whoever wants to pronounce it. But wait, tell us about that. What's, yeah, because I proper love Africa, and I've got a big thing about it. But it started with me old man, and then obviously I've been there a few times, and there's something about that place which isn't there.
Yeah, you know, once you got your feet in that dirt, there's something about that red dirt that it's in your blood, it's in your bones, and it'll never leave you. It's an incredibly ancient and magical continent, and it really strikes the hearts of pretty much everyone who goes there. But I was lucky enough to grow up in Africa, in South Africa, and I'll be honest with you, it's probably shaped and formed the bit of a nutter who I am today, because I grew up in Johannesburg, which is, as you probably know, a concrete city. And it was, you know, Africa, South Africa, Joburg, they're not places where you are wrapped up in cotton wool, where you're kind of protected, you know, and sheltered from the roughness of what life can be. It's a place where, you know, as a kid, you're growing up and you're walking around and seeing guys that have just been stabbed, freshly lying dead on the ground, and in horrific accidents because there's drugs and just craziness. And, you know, there's a lot of violence. You're constantly hearing stories about your neighbors who have, you know, been broken into, and someone's been killed or raped or this or that or shot in the head. And so I guess that was my norm. You know, it was a very, very different lifestyle to what I think I would have had if I grew up in the countryside in Surrey. And it sounds all dramatic and pretty rough there, but by the same token, we used to go on holiday to the game reserves in South Africa. And that's a complete juxtaposition of these, you know, the concrete city with violence, and it's pretty volatile there. And then you go out into some of the most stunning, beautiful wilderness and wildlife that exists on the planet. Really ancient and stunning. And you know, so Africa doesn't really have the same health and safety vibes as here. And so when you go out there, it's, you know, it's pretty awesome. You can get up to all kinds of mischief and, you know, get in pretty hairy situations with wildlife. And that was my norm. And so I didn't know it at the time, but that was probably the seeds of what has evolved into what I am now, really. But I was, I'm so lucky to have grown up there. So I left when I was 15 and came to the UK with my folks.
It is probably one of the, it is an amazing place to grow up. I was really jealous of my dad because that's where he grew up. And funny, I'm sat here in the room. There's a couple of other lads who we did what I used to do. We were talking about Africa last night, actually. We were having a couple of drinks and we were talking about Africa and how, I don't mind Joburg. I quite like it, actually. I like the
It's got so much culture, so much character.
And the edginess I quite enjoy as well. But when you get out in the bush, like, I've never been as scared as when I've been in close proximity to wildlife. There is nothing more scarier than elephants that are starting to get a little bit sketchy, or rhinos that are just crashing. It's like, am I wrong? Do you agree?
You know what? I think we're just from, we grew up with the opposing situations, right? You went into the military and you went into some pretty hairy situations around the world where you had to learn and predict human behavior, and you were kitted out and you were trained up to deal with whatever came at you from, you know, people who, I don't know, you're in war situations, you're probably in situations where people weren't quite, you know, there with it in terms of places that you went to that were rough. And that's not my comfort zone. My comfort zone was growing up in the bush with the wildlife and with nature, and knowing, okay, that's an elephant behavior, that's a rhino behavior. I know how to. So that, I feel much more comfortable around wildlife, and my fear zone is people.
Yeah.
No, so it's literally the opposite, you know. So you learn behaviors of stuff, I find the predictability of the unpredictable way that wildlife behaves, I don't know, I'm used to that. Whereas with people, that's been my scariest moments on any expedition.
That's mental, because I tell you what, there's like, I'm here with a few gnarly lads and we were talking, some of the stories last night were just hilarious, like things creeping up on us at night and just literally blokes screaming like five-year-old kids. It was funny.
And I bet, was that people creeping up on you guys?
No, I don't care about that. It was the, like, there was literally...
Oh, you mean in Africa? Yeah, no, okay, yeah.
And we were talking about all our experiences over there, you know.
Yeah.
And do exercises over there, and you sort of like, normally, you know, you're used to being the war-fighting person, and then the next thing you know, you're sort of dropped into the bush, whether it's in Malawi or, you know, it doesn't matter where it is, and there's things creeping around at night making noises, and you're like, oh.
At night time, it's the sounds that wildlife makes at night that is just oh.
Yeah, it's It's horrible. No, it's not horrible. It's great. It's just it's humbling is what it is.
That is, you know what I love about it the most is that you realize that we keep seeing ourselves as human beings up on this pedestal of intelligence, and you go out there and suddenly you're well down the food chain. This has put me in perspective. All right, I get it.
I tell you what, it's like a real life Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Like Africa is Jurassic Park. Just
it totally is.
Dinosaurs. But going back to adventure, you spoke about that expedition you did in the States. Would you say that was your first gnarly big expedition, or was that just an intro? And if it wasn't, what was?
Oh, it depends what you'd call gnarly. Are we talking about physically gnarly and epic in terms of scenery, or mentally screwing your head up gnarly? Because I would choose the ones.
Whatever you think was your first big, the one thing that you remember thinking, fuck, that was the first big thing that I did. The one that really sort of started, that's when I knew that I'd been put under pressure or really challenged.
I would say that would be Namibia, actually, because I would say that weirdly the Thames River, swimming that, if you talk about mental gnarliness and learning how to lot from, you know, I mean, you're in the water with your head in freezing cold water, 10 hours a day swimming with no current, and you can't see sod all because it's brown. You can't hear anything with, you know, the little plugs in your ears, and you can't speak to anyone. Because your head's in the water the whole day for 10 hours, and it's just, and you're cold and you're tired. I just, you know, I realize that my head can go to some pretty, pretty frustrating and, you know, horrific places that are really not helpful. So mentally that one, but yeah, Namibia was where I cycled from the border with Angola across the semi-arid, the desert regions over there, you know, bordering the oldest desert in the world. And cycled down to Swakopmund, and that was a solo fat bike journey. And that was where I think I cut my teeth a little bit. That's where I really put myself under the pressures of wildlife, of environment. So we're talking about, you know, just shy of 50 degrees Celsius heat on most of the days out there. And it was all solo, and I was relying on water sources as I was going. And what I was stupid enough not to do was research what climate had been like over the last few years. It so happened that they'd been in drought for a number of years there. So all these little water holes and rivers and sources that in my head I was relying on, and I could see from a Google map that was taken, you know, a picture years ago, that was not true. There was nothing realistic about that. And so, I'd suffered massively from dehydration. We ended up having to put caches of water along the way. And I just remember going out there and going through lion territory and in these canyons, and my crew would kind of meet me at various points. So I'd go and self-film and do my own thing. They tried to film me at the beginning and be around me the whole time and pretend that I was solo, and I just told them to sod off, because you can't pretend that, can you? I was going through lion territory, and I remember one of the days it was 49 and a half degrees Celsius, and I had a lion warden. I wasn't allowed to go through his conservation region without having a guy in a landy a few miles ahead just on radio to me saying, you know, there's a lion coming through this area, be aware of that. And just because I was solo, and he radioed through to me and said, you know, as you come out of the canyon, just be aware that you come down the river bend, you know, you go around that corner, follow it through, and you'll start popping out the other side of the canyon, and on your right hand side you'll see jackals and vultures, and there's a fresh lion kill there. And thought, fuck, really sod this. So that was the time that I suppose, the wildlife got the better of me. Yeah, I sound all like bullshit. Yeah, I can deal with it. I'm comfortable. But when you're on your own with lions, and the guy told me that morning, he's like, oh yeah, just good luck, because on a bicycle you look like an antelope. That's a perfect damn meal for these lions.
Cheers, mate. Thanks for
cheers for the confidence. Awesome, you know. And yeah, just as I got to this place and I started looking to the side of me, I'd been pushing hard because the desperation, the fear of just getting out and wondering, have these guys circled around, and they're actually going to come crossing my path when he's 5 miles down the way and can't help me if I'm in trouble. I've got no gun, I've got no pepper spray, I've got no foghorn, nothing. I just pushed so hard and I was so dehydrated that I passed out. I lost consciousness 200 meters or yards or whatever it was from this lion kill, And luckily he had a gut instinct that he needed to come back. And I woke up in his landy, and he had found me just wandering around aimlessly, like non comprende. Wow. So that's where I guess the pressure and the learning came from, just stupidity, just making decisions that came either out of ego, where you think you're better than you are and you can conquer nature and wildlife and yourself, and or coming out of just fear of uncertainty of you know, that's where I realized you can't doubt yourself out there. That's a bad thing to do. You've got to learn to trust yourself, and you've got to be, you know, you've got to look after your body, because if you don't, you're in trouble.
That is definitely the case anywhere, really, but especially out in places like that. And by the way, everyone, Namibia is an awesome country.
Stunning. It's so otherworldly, isn't it?
Yeah, it is awesome. It changes a fair bit, but it's bizarre. It's awesome, though.
What I love about traveling through it, though, is that every 50 kilometers you go from this, you know, semi-desert into suddenly this lush, you know, green wilderness and oasis. So then next thing you're in the sand dunes that are some of the tallest in the world. It's mad.
It is awesome. I want to go back to the Thames, because the Thames, I have dived in it, it's stinking. And did you, how long did that take all up?
Well, I think it was around 2 weeks, maybe two and a bit weeks. It would have gone a bit faster. I had to take a few days off because I got sick, very ill.
That was my next question. What happened? Did you get sick from the river? Yeah.
I'm a total mug for choosing the Thames. I could have gone somewhere like, you know, the Bahamas to go and do a long swim, but the Thames, geez. So it was fine upriver when I started by the source of it, running and then, you know, wading through, and then it got deep enough. And that was fine and pristine and beautiful. And the wildlife around was amazing. And then I got down towards Berkshire area and heading towards London. And do you know where Marlow is?
Yeah.
So a few locks before I hit Marlow area, one of the guys who was manning one of the locks said to me, listen, you know, just make sure that when you get to this region, you swim breaststroke with your head above water. And I said, well, what are you talking about, mate? And he said, oh, no, there's a pump. There's a big facility where they deal with sewage. Mm. And for years now, we've been trying to get in the news, but they had a big crack in one of these pipes, and they just can't be asked to repair it. And so just, you know, you'll see a little bit of red tape that they've literally put on buoys into the river to cordon off a little section. Just be careful of that. And I was like, all right. And lo and behold, got to this section. And, you know, yeah, I don't know if it was my eyes deceiving me, but you start seeing things floating down the river. But there's definitely a stench. So it was very obvious that something was not right there. And a day later, I started getting stomach cramps and I wanted to vomit, and I couldn't really swim properly. And I was wearing a wetsuit, 3 mil wetsuit at the time. And it got to the stage where I kept trying to push through. And then the end of it was basically where you end up defecating in your wetsuit. And then you're like, all right, I think I better take a couple of days out now, because I didn't have enough time to swim to the edge. It was vile. Sorry. Hope you've had your breakfast.
So I love the way that they sort of like mark, they put red markers, buoys. It's all well and good that like humans can sort of like pretty much work out, okay, I don't go in there, but the shit that's in there doesn't listen to
this. Oh, exactly. Exactly. No, it is rank. It was absolutely rank. So I got very ill off of that. And I would recommend upstream.
For people listening, and actually me, where's the source of the Thames exactly? Where did you start walking in water?
You're taking me back through quite a few years now. Is it near Gloucestershire? There is literally this stone in the middle of a field of cows underneath a tree in the middle of a farm in the middle of nowhere, towards the west. Oh my gosh, are you pulling me up on this now? I think it's heading towards Gloucestershire, Somerset sort of region. Right.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the town, mate. I ran for the first while, and then suddenly you see a trickle coming and you follow the path. There's a path that, you know, goes the whole way all the way to London. And when it got deep enough by Cricklade, then I started wading up to my knees, and, you know, a few miles after that it was deep enough to get in and start swimming. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. You actually went from the real source of the Thames, really.
Yeah, of course, mate. Yeah. No, and at the time, to be honest with you, I was trying to do the longest triathlon in Britain, in the UK, and then Sean Conway trumped that pretty quickly. But I was at a time and stage in my life where I was young and trying to prove something to myself and to the world. So I was trying to take on everything, so it had to be, you know, like from the source, and I was out to prove stuff.
What was the best bit of the Thames for you? That first bit when you weren't in the dirty, stinking water?
Basically, yeah, where you could actually see down to the bottom. Although it was pretty mucky up there. I remember a few miles in, I kind of stood up because it was just not deep enough to swim much because of the reeds and everything. And I put my foot down and I put it into something and I pulled my foot up and realised it was in someone's shoe. But yeah, it's all right. It was just, it was a bit heartbreaking even further upriver there. It was just filled with litter. It was a state. Yeah. You know, there's a few pristine areas for a few miles, but that's about it.
Where did you finish?
So I wasn't allowed to get permission from the Port of London authorities to go further than Putney Bridge. They just refused, even though some people before had done it. They decided that there were too many people who had seen David Walliams and a few other people doing their swim in the Thames, and they were just jumping in at night and having to be rescued. And so they thought that if I did it, I would encourage people to go swimming in London with the speedboats and all that. And I said to them, listen, I'll have a whole crew. Like, we'll stick to the side. I'll have a boat with me. I'll have a crew with me instead of paddleboards, everything. And they said, no, sorry.
There's
many idiots out there.
I've got a mate actually. He's on the Tower lifeboat. He's part of the crew there, which is the London lifeboat, and they are the busiest lifeboat in the whole of the country. And they're probably responsible for quite a small stretch of water, really. And it is predominantly because of people.
Yeah, completely.
They can crack the Thames. No, I'm not going to cross the bridge. I'll just swim it. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, in all fairness, when you see the tide going out under those bridges, you can understand. I mean, that thing sweeps you in seconds gone.
There's something I want to talk about because we talk about places we love, but Guyana and the Essequibo. I've actually spent, I think I've lived on, not lived on the Essequibo, but I've lived in a section of the jungle on the Essequibo for a couple of months.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh, wow.
Go off and do stuff. It was obviously military bits and pieces. You go into the jungle, do a bit of riverine. But we were opposite, where we were sort of stationed was opposite Bartica.
Okay.
We had raiding craft and we used to like shoot over and spend a night in Bartica. There's a bar there called the Cool Breeze, I think it was called.
Oh, damn, we must have missed that one.
No, there's a bar. Well, there was one there. I don't know. This was quite a while ago. But what an amazing place. And we only saw a section of the Essequibo. We didn't, we went from the sea and then we came down to that area, but we didn't go much further up. So, I mean, it is a wild place, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. Jungles, anywhere you go, are just some of the most unbelievably testing grounds that you can put yourself in. And I think if you want to know if you can survive and you can make it there, you can make it pretty much anywhere. But yeah, the Essequibo, Guyana, Southern Guyana was unreal. We went through quite an emotional journey on the trip. So we were trying to find the source of the Essequibo River, which is the third largest river in South America. And that had never been found or documented before. So we wanted to set up this international collaboration with these guys from a YY tribe community, right, Indigenous community in the far south. And they lived on the river. And so we took five of their warriors, their best warriors, with us. And we wanted them to be able to find their river and be proud, because there's a lot of these tribes and Indigenous communities, they're marginalized within their own countries. And they've, it's something that we could have done to put them on the map in their own country and have pride. Anyway, Yeah, going up there, it's pristine virgin rainforest. And, you know, you go really make the most of that because they're disappearing, as we know. And the diversity there was something that I had never before experienced in my life. I was humbled once again because, it's not just the lions and the big predators that are out to get you, that you feel very far down the food chain. In the jungle, anything small, they want to bite you, they want to lay their babies in you, they want to eat you, they want to kill. I mean, everything is out to get you. It's a nightmare, absolute nightmare. But waking up to the sound at 4 a.m. of howler monkeys echoing across this green canopy, it's phenomenal. Lying in your hammock and, at one point I woke up in the middle of the night to something brushing underneath and you look to the side and you just see something furry disappearing off and, was that a jaguar? What was it? We had jaguars coming into camp and it was phenomenal. And the emotional side of it came. I mean, we're jungle toddlers. These warriors taught us everything about how to survive there. We wouldn't have been able to get through that. And we were in a place where there was no possibility of rescue if something did go wrong. If we'd got bitten by, a snake that, something pretty rough, then there was no way out. There was no helicopter that had a winch. And even if there was, you're in dense, thick jungle canopy, primary rainforest, so tall trees. Mm-hmm. And there's nowhere for it to land and there's nowhere for a winch to come down because they didn't have a winch. And you have to, if you're going to get evacuated, you have to cut down an area of rainforest the size of a football pitch, which I think you'll know all about. It's just when you get into certain areas, you're not going to get out there, right? There's no rescue. That was magical and beautiful. And I think we really learned about survival properly there. And then as you go downriver, and you get towards some of the towns that flank the Essequibo, you suddenly realize that there's this slow creep of humanity upriver. And you start seeing the illegal logging and illegal gold mining and dredging of the river. And that just gets more and more prominent to the point that, the wildlife is drowned out and it disappears. And we started getting heartbroken, looking up at the very last remnants of the rainforest before we left that region. And there's howler monkeys just sat at the top there howling across. And on the other side of the river was what used to be, I think, the second largest mine in the world. And it's just this huge scar on the landscape. It's decimated. There's nothing there. And it's just left behind. And that was heartbreaking. So it was a mixed bag. It was quite an experience and hugely humbling, both from the wildlife and survival perspective, but also from understanding our place in, being a part of that whole chain. Because when we asked these illegal loggers where this stuff was going, it ended up, they said, well, it goes off to China and it gets made into the stuff that you guys buy.
So
it was eye-opening.
It's horrible. What was the, did you find the actual, did you get to the source?
Yeah, we did. That was emotional. I think way more so for the warriors, the YY warriors, because as we got closer, we finally found that we were being led up a hill and it was kind of winding around this little peak that we could see on our GPS, but we couldn't see through the canopy. Yeah. And they stopped and they started praying and having a little moment to themselves. And one of the leaders, he went ahead and disappeared for a little while. And as he came back, we looked at him and we were like, something's different about you. And he had basically clean shaven his entire face. And it was this, sense of being pure for coming to something that was the source of life for their ancestors for hundreds of years. It was very, very special for them. And so, the emotion, I can't put into words how that felt, being a part of allowing them to, find it with our technology, them allowing us to find it with their survival skills and their, knowledge of the rainforest. It was just beautiful, that collaboration. And we went to the top and it was just it was a bit of an anticlimax, I guess, because you get to the top there and it's just this like tiny little muddy wall and a bit of a trickle coming out. We were like, all right. I mean, we kind of knew that's what to expect, but it's like, okay, cool. So I guess we'll go back down now and head down to the sea.
I always like the way that the planet means a lot more to the people that are connected to it. There's a lot of people, do you know what I mean? Like all those sort of indigenous people that come from those areas are so much more connected with it. And you can see the emotion that it invokes in them when they get to things that mean something to them. Do you know what I mean? As opposed to like a lot of us just cut around cities and not really give two fucks about what's going on. And I think that's a bit of a shame sometimes. In fact, it's a shame all the time.
Yeah, I think so. You know, like earlier this year, I spent a decent amount of time doing some survival training with the Bushmen, the San Bushmen in Namibia, northeast Namibia. And again, I mean, they're the oldest civilization on the planet, literally. They're 200,000 years back. We can trace that lineage to them for everyone. And it's just so humbling. You go in there and they have a very interesting setup in that. I guess where part of the reason why they are the oldest civilization in the world is that they have no hierarchy, which is alien to me. I mean, my entire life I've grown up with hierarchies. That's all I know. Yeah. And they, bless them, I mean, they don't have a word for no.
Mm.
It never had to exist. And so when people come in from the outside and ask them for stuff, they say they can't say no. They don't know how. So they get into a lot of trouble with modern world.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just these, their connectedness to nature. When I was sitting there, you know, going out on tracking and hunting journeys with them, and they'd look at me and be really confused and baffled. And they say, well, why are you on this like up and down and up and down with your emotions? And I said, well, I suppose, you know, I'm trying to find happiness and trying to be good at something. And the conversations that you have with these indigenous communities about happiness, they just can't comprehend the things that we say would make us happy, the money and the belongings and the, you know, their whole world is the opposite way around of connectedness to nature, to each other, the community and harmony. And they said, you don't go chasing happiness.
Yeah,
you know, that's not how it works. And happiness comes through a sense of service to others, not through you finding it and not through having collecting. And so, yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, I actually spent 7 days with a San a few years ago because it was for a pilot for a show that didn't go, because obviously I'm probably a bit of a knob. But ultimately, it was the one thing I took from it was they were awesome. And like, they, by the way, for anyone listening, their language is epic. I'm never even going to try, because there's clicks and all sorts of weird tones going on. I don't know how they do it all at the same time, but anyway, they're awesome. But the one thing I noticed from it was they are the happiest bunch of people, because and they've got nothing, as far as we're concerned. When we look at them, they've got nothing, but they've got so much more than us because of the community feel and everything. About it's all about their people and who they live with and the village and all that. And And ultimately, I think that they're in massive conflict at the moment, aren't they? Because of the ingress of modern world technology, and their young are losing the ancient skills that the elders know, because they're being drawn and being sort of like influenced and almost coerced into city life, I suppose. And it's a real shame. I don't know what the answer is, because I ain't that clever, but it is sad to watch. Yeah, and it's an amazing. It is, like, again, going back to the people that really appreciate the planet are the ones that really sort of get emotional for it.
Well, look, when you survive on your backyard, you have a different perspective, don't you? You can't help but have that appreciation. You know, they only take what they need, and that's it. And like you said, they don't need much else, because their happiness comes from a different source other than having, you know, keeping up with the Joneses and the biggest house. And so, yeah, so it's a different world, and it's a very humbling world, massively so. And you're right, that's a whole nother podcast, really, to talk about what they're up against.
I noticed I was going down a rabbit hole there. But
happy to, but have you got 2 hours?
You've got time for that. You, like, a lot of your stuff involves endurance. So, I mean, what's your take on endurance? How do you condition yourself, prep yourself for that? Is it physical, or I know what the answer is, but is it physical or is it mental for you?
Yeah, look, I thought when I was younger, when I first did those initial expeditions, I was like, yeah, I'm just going to beast it. I'm quite a tall girl, and I've got a lot of upper arm strength quite easily, a lot of muscle memory. And I was like, yeah, come on. And my ego is just running riot. And I went out and I just broke myself and hurt myself and injured myself. Okay, there's another way to this. So look, physically, your body is unbelievably adaptable. You know, I went out on that cycle. I hadn't cycled in years, and I had been paddleboarding mostly sitting down because of the pace that we're going through on the previous expedition. So I had these little like pinprick legs and these massive rugby player arms, which is useless on a bicycle. And within 1 week, I'd completely adapted. My body was in the swing of it, from huge pain to going over 100 miles a day, up hills, down, you know. And our body, that blew my mind. The respect that I have for my body now is just second to none. But the answer is, it's a mental game, completely and utterly. You can do a short power session in the gym, or, you know, these short bursts and sprints, and that's a pretty physical game. But once you say endurance is coming into play, that you'll see some of the fittest, massive, muscly, you know, incredibly intensely built men and women on the planet crumble and fall before many others, who you would look at them and be like, are you joking me? You're doing what, endurance race? Look at you, come on. And that's this. When that breaks, everything goes, because your body will keep working with you. It'll keep going. It'll find a way. It'll adapt. And, you know, if you look after it, it'll just keep holding you steady on that track that you're going along. But yeah, mentally, so many people that I thought were strong broke. And so did I many times over.
Agreed. I totally agree with
you.
So
yeah, I think it's training the brain, isn't it? It's the same with anything in life. It's, you know, when it comes to emotions, relationships, business, it's training the brain. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. Wholeheartedly agree with you. Changing the subject now. Let's move on to your children's book. What? I mean, that's awesome. But where did that idea come from?
I don't know. I never thought I was particularly good with kids. So I just never dreamed that my first book as an author would be for a kid's book. But I just got approached by a publisher, and they just thought it'd be a fantastic idea to go back through history. So from modern times all the way through to thousands of years back, and find some of the greatest explorers on the planet. And I think, you know, it's pretty pertinent. We're in a time now where we've realized that our kids need to be more connected. We're in a world where they're under threat of going down the rabbit hole of, you know, devices and computer games, and really disconnecting from our planet. And now more than ever, we need them to be the opposite, connected. And I just thought, you know, there's also, from a confidence perspective, you know, it means the world to me when I get messages from parents on social media and they say, oh, my little girl, my little son follows you, and they have for years, thank you so much. And you realize that they're desperate, they're craving some of these fantastical stories that just open their mind and baff them, you know, stories of intrigue and danger and daring and, you know, failing and getting back up again. And where to find that better than explorers who push the boundaries and, you know, go through a hell of a lot of failure, but come out triumphant more often than not, you know. And that's where it is. So I think your mate Aldo Kane's in there. So I should probably send him a book, right?
Can't. Don't worry about it.
Oh, don't worry. There's lots of pictures. He can kind of grasp the story.
Yeah, he's all right with that, yeah. Sorry.
But yeah, all the way back to ancient monks, you know, and everything in between. And so it's really taking, I've found that I've had almost as many messages from adults who have bought the book and for their kid, but basically commandeered it themselves and gone, actually. So yeah, that's how it's called, Adventure Starts at Bedtime. And yeah, we've got a few follow-ups coming on for that. So
I like the way you've got the complete opposite ends of the spectrum. You've got monks, and then you've got Aldo Kane, who is probably the furthest from a monk.
I know, completely. But those monks in the old days, you know, when they went on their pilgrimages, they were hardcore.
Yeah, I know, that's what I mean. Hardcore. They were hardcore. Yeah.
Nails, guys. I mean, it's mental. They didn't have the technology to, you know, so yeah, fair play. But then you've got Aldo, the story from Aldo is basically he's in a live volcano, you're rigging up to go down into the heart and the belly of it. And yeah, it's just mad. There's some cool stuff. Some very cool stuff in there.
Yeah, I'm going to get that. Staying on that subject, was there ever like a fictional character? This is a weird question. I don't know where this come from, but was there ever a fictional character that inspired you?
Oh, you know, I read a lot of books, you know, a huge amount when I was younger, but not really. I can't honestly say that. But when I was a kid, and even to this day, my dream world is insane. It's like The Lord of the Rings every single night.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so for me, I just had such a vivid and wild imagination. You know, like I'm third born, I've got two older brothers, 6 and 8 years older than me. And I think my parents, you know, when you have a firstborn child, it's like, yeah, all the energy goes into them. And then secondborn comes along and you're like, yeah, I got a bit of energy, I'll throw to you. And then thirdborn comes along and it's like, yeah, can't really be asked, just find your way, mate. And ended up a bit feral, I think, a bit wild and feral. And, you know, in South Africa, we had gardens, spent all my time out there. And I think it was just my imagination that inspired me, to be honest with you. And I lived in my own world that I created. So not really a fictional character, no. And in South Africa, we didn't even know the stories of, you know, the British explorers from around the world. I didn't grow up with that. I grew up with Shaka Zulu. And, you know, stories of how he trained his army. There's these thorns in Africa that you get that no matter which way they fall, there's always one bit sticking up. They're kind of triangular. Mm-hmm. And he used to make them run across fields of these and then heal their feet and run across fields of them. And so that's kind of stories I grew up with, a bit rough and ready. But
well, that's a better answer than I was expecting. Well done, nice one.
I tried, mate. I tried.
Wait, yeah, you bailed me out there. Okay, so we start trying to wind it down a little bit because of time, but what challenges have you got coming up next when all this mentalness is over?
Yeah, look, there's some stuff that I can't talk about that we in the process of, you know, getting the ideas together for survival things and whatnot. So I'm a sort of classic situation is like, yeah, what you got next? I can't tell you. By the same token, there's also lockdown has caused some big changes to happen. And my man Jake and I, when he can get here from South Africa eventually, we're buying a farm. So we're going to have a madhouse there as well. And I think that's going to be an adventure in itself. So I'll be doing a lot of bushcraft and also farming and going a bit nuts there. But yeah, that's all I can say at the moment.
That's good enough. That is much better. That's really good. Buying a farm is pretty mental. Buying a house is mental enough, let alone a farm.
I know.
Okay, so basically I'm going to ask one more question, and then what I've got to do on my phone, I've got to flick through some things, because what we do is we ask listeners to send in questions, and then the question that I ask you, they get a bottle of Talisker.
Ooh, nice.
Don't worry, you get one as well.
I was going to say, that was my next question. I've run out of whiskey, mate.
Don't worry about that. So, to wrap up my side of things, what is your ultimate ambition? What is out there that you really want to do?
Oh my gosh, my list is so long. I've got to head back. You know what? It's going back to the extremes, jungles and deserts. My ultimate ambition in life, that's a really hard one to answer. I mean, obviously I really enjoy things like, you know, I've been filming a documentary about the illicit rhino horn trade. Yeah. And I've really got quite heavy into investigative stuff, and it's a bit edgy and it's on the front lines, and I really enjoy that. So probably it will veer down a bit of a direction of that. And also I think I need to challenge myself in survival. So that would be learning as much as I can about primitive survival and then testing, going into a testing ground. And I think that best place would be probably jungle for that, and see, you know, can you survive for 3 months on your own, 4 months on your own, with no intervention from anyone, with nothing, you know, just going there with a knife and that's it, and see what you can do.
Nice.
So yeah, but I mean, ultimately ambition in life, I suppose the more kind of fluffy philosophical, you know, view on that, I don't think that I have, you know, if you asked me 10 years ago, and I think you would have this, what you thought that your ambition was for 10 years, I don't know, you'd think that you'd be doing what you're doing now at all. I don't think you could have predicted that at all. And no. So it's an organic journey. I have no idea what twist and turn is going to come up, but I think ultimately being in service to others is really what it's about. I think when you can help others, and maybe you probably have a bit of an insight into that. I mean, even now with your podcast and the work that you do, that's being in service to others, you know, being an ambassador for mental health issues and opening up and making that something that's no longer taboo. So for me, it's a similar kind of thing is going out and finding the stories that help other people. It's more outward, not inward now for me. So leaving a legacy of some sort in that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It is an amazing thing when that stuff happens. Right, here we go. So basically,
what is it going to be like?
I think I've picked one. There's one. This isn't a winner, by the way, but I'm intrigued to know why they've asked you this.
Oh God. Okay.
The 8575 has asked, "Do pelicans blink?" Are you an expert on pelicans?
I do know the answer to this. They do. Oh. And it's more a membraney thing. And they can blink independently. Each eye can blink independently. There's the answer.
Maybe that should have been the question. Sorry, Chris P8575. You just got up there because it was a bizarre question. okay, there's... I'll ask this. This is the one, and it. Okay, Rob P 77. Would you take Jason Carl Fox and Aldo Kane on an adventure? That's his question, but that's not the. I'm going to add to his question. I'm helping him win a bottle of Talisker. What would the adventure be?
Well, first of all, you've got to placate me here, because you two together would probably be a bloody nightmare. You're trouble. Nah. I've heard you guys. You the two best friends, two lads.
Yeah, but we're sensible at times.
No, I think it'd be a bloody good laugh, actually. Yeah, of course, is the answer. I probably need it because I don't think I have the same kind of survival skills as you guys do. So I'd probably get myself into all kinds of trouble and be like, hey, can you just rig some rope and save me?
No, not at all. You'd be bailing us out 100%, believe me.
But yeah, what would it be? You know what? It would have to be...
That out of the way. Me and Aldo out of the way. What would... If you were with a group of people...
Yeah.
You've done a lot of stuff on your own, which is awesome. Yeah. But what would be the one where you just, for fun, not too much pressure,
okay,
just what we'd like to do is a sort of like, more like a downtime expedition, bit of a crack. That's what me and Aldo are about anyway.
Yeah,
totally. Not doing hard shit anymore.
You know what? You're getting a bit old there, mate. Bit creaky in the bones now. Got the same problem. It would be all about just scenic and having a good laugh. So it'd probably be, you know, bit of climbing and rigging up some kind of mountainous and a few rocks and things like that, getting up to a nice vista, bivvying up there, and maybe following a stream down towards where there's a river and doing some whitewater rapids and just having a good giggle, really, and yeah, it's ending up by the ocean. And I don't know, I mean, stereotypical, just something that has a bit of dynamic to it. Something that, yeah.
And also,
I'd really like to learn to climb. That's one thing that I can't do very well. So I'd love to learn how to rig and climb.
Okay, Kane's good at that. He's all over that stuff.
Yeah, I've got two left feet, so it'll take a good while for me to learn that stuff.
Yeah, so basically, for people listening, anyone can do what you just said, and it's about getting out there and doing stuff, which is really important, I think, for lots of people.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I get this sort of question quite a lot is, you know, how do you do what you do, and how can I even think about doing that? And I think that it's really just about starting. You know, it's the same with anything in life. It's making a decision, and the Latin, you know, definition of decision is a cut, a split, a decision.
Yeah.
And so for a lot of people, I think that's things like booking the flight or, yeah, you know, doing something that's irreversible that forces you to get out there and just start. And it's not about doing the biggest bloody thing out there, you know, and I think there's a whole wave of stuff going on social media where you have to one up and bigger and better with, you know, than the last person. And it's just rubbish, rubbish. And just start wherever, because you've got your whole life ahead, you know, you're going to find a lot of stuff to do. So
once you start, you can't stop.
That's exactly good. Completely addictive.
So basically, just going back to Rob P77's question, the answer is no, she wouldn't, because she thinks that we're an epic. But anyway.
No, I would, but I just have one eyeball on you guys. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, Ness, that's awesome. I really appreciate your time. We could talk for fucking ages, to be honest with you, because
there's so many things that you can go down a rabbit hole, but hey, time there's
rabbit holes on each one of those bloody discussion points. But anyway, I really appreciate coming on. Thanks for the professional background. Looks cool. Mine's pretty cool, to be honest, but there we go. I'm in a quarantine again. So yeah, anyway, take care. Have a what day are we on? It's Friday. Have a good week.
Yeah, lost track. Yeah.
Nice one. I really appreciate that.
Oh, thanks, mate. Been great talking to you. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much to Ness. Hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast if you don't already, and follow me and the Book of Man for the latest news. Thanks again to Talisker for supporting this podcast, and thanks for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.